Great. Well, thank you. Thanks for staying this long. I promised you'd have a good speaker at the end, and we do have one. We have John Laird, who was appointed by Governor Brown in January to be the secretary of the Resources Agency. And you probably dealt with the Resources Agency because it includes about 15 commissions, including the Energy Commission. It includes the Departments of Conservation, Fish and Game, Forestry and Fire Protection, Parks and Recreation, Recycling and Water Resources. And they also oversee many other state functions. I mean, if you go to their website, it's just, you know, different state group after another. So it's really, he's a very important man here. And this follows a distinguished career on the Santa Cruz City Council, where he served as mayor for two terms. He was three terms in the California Assembly, representing portions of Santa Cruz, Monterey, and Santa Clara counties. And the last time he was elected, he got more than 70% of the vote. He authored 82 bills, including one that established the Sierra Nevada Conservancy, and he's also a member after that of the California Integrated Waste Management Board. He's a terrifically great speaker. We're glad to have him here, and so please welcome John Laird.
Thank you. I know many of you have been sitting listening to speakers all day, so thanks for sticking it out. And I know in some ways I'm one of the major things that stands between you and rush hour, so we'll see. And I get a big kick out of getting a badge that says speaker. When I was in the assembly, I used to always wear them into the speaker's office to see if he would notice afterwards. I think he'd been displaced. What I wanted to do is, you've been talking in great detail, and I came in and sat through part of the last session. I was really impressed with the energy and the level of how people are addressing some of the climate change issues. And I thought I'd stand back and just talk a little bit at the state level about sort of how we got where we are and what some of the views are that you're really dealing with by implementing it at the local level. And it's great to do it at an event sponsored by the Local Government Commission. I was a member of the Local Government Commission from 1982 to the end of 1990, and it was called the, if I have it right, Judy, you had to be appointed originally by the governor, and I was a midnight appointment by Governor Jerry Brown to the SolarCal Local Government Commission on Energy and Renewable Resources. So it allowed me to say that before I was appointed, that I'd served on an energy-based commission and that I'd been appointed by Governor Brown in his previous incarnation, which was a great thing to be able to say. But that commission, when you look, because there were a lot of people talking about what you had to do over 15 years or 20 years, and it was interesting with that commission because there was work done about diversion from landfills and what we needed to do then. And then in 1989, with the involvement of many local government commission members, a bill was passed that set a goal that we would divert 50% of what was going into landfills. We would figure out how to keep it out. And when we did that, some of us that supported it thought, we'll never get to 50%. That is just impossible. But it is really nice to have the goal. And right now, we're at 59%. And Wes Chesbro, who was an active member of the Local Government Commission, was appointed to the original Waste Board. And it really made a fundamental difference. And it was setting that goal and then accepting the fact that you had that goal. And what are you going to do at the practical local level to really implement it? And one of my good friends who's on the Santa Cruz City Council is here. And when I was elected to the Santa Cruz City Council, and God help me, it was 30 years ago this November, the city manager sat down and said to me, if you serve two terms here, before you're done, we will be working on siting a new landfill, because we only have 22 years life left on our landfill. That was in 1981. Well, now we're in 2011, and that same landfill has an over 30-year life to it, 30 years later, because Santa Cruz has a higher rate than the 59% that's going statewide, and that goal that was set is really what helped us do what it took to make those kind of changes. And so today, you've been talking about climate change. And I was one of the first three authors of AB 32, but it's sort of a hollow claim because when I did it, it didn't really do what it did in the end when we first started it with Fran Pavley and other people. But the significant thing about AB 32, excuse me, because a year ago I was teaching at UC Santa Cruz and I tried to explain to the students that AB 32 didn't get into the weeds with all the specific things, thank you, that you needed to do to lower emissions. It set the goals and empowered the Air Board and empowered a fee structure and did things, because if we put into the bill everything we had to do, we never would have been able to pass it. But by doing the goals and empowering people, we made it happen. We had it signed into law. That is very, very significant. And the reason you're here talking about all that is because that process happened that way. And the piece of that I, and it's hard because it means that we have to do in 2020 what we were doing in 1990. And that amazingly is a reduction of 25%. We just heard Oakland's presentation where their goal is 36%, and appreciate that aggressiveness. But you have to match it against, and there was a little discussion in the panel I just sat in about adaptation versus the actual mitigation of emissions. And one of the 25 things that I serve on now, you go, you guys that are local elected officials, I had to fill out 25 Form 700s. You haven't lived until you've done that. And I am now chair of the Ocean Protection Council, which I love working on that issue. And we have a team of scientists that are associated with the Ocean Protection Council. And we did the science through the scientists of what we could expect between now and 2100 on sea level rise. And it was great because it was based on science. It was thoughtful. There were some parameters that if we mitigate, it's at the low end. If we don't mitigate, it's at the higher end. And it's, you look back 100 years, there's a 7-inch sea rise in that period. You look to 2050, the median is 14 inches. You look to 2100, the median is 55 inches, or roughly almost 5.5 feet. And you have to start thinking about that, what that means for California. And we sent that out to a whole range of people and said, this is your scientific guidance. And there were some people that wrote back and said, tell us what specifically to do. And it was sort of like, this is your scientific guidance. You think of what you want given a 55-inch sea level rise in the next 90 years about how you site long-term facilities. And I was thinking of all the gravity flow things we had in Santa Cruz and different things that were related to sea level. And that's very important. And it actually helps us make the case for lowering the emissions when you start to look at what your adaptation strategies are. They feed off of each other in a very good way. We can be at the low end of those sea level rise figures if we're incredibly successful at mitigating greenhouse gas emissions. And it resolves some political issues. I mean, when I was in the legislature, one of the bills that was not among the 82 I had signed into law that was mentioned was one on sea level rise. And nobody was doing anything. And I thought, okay, we need to get people talking about this. We need to help local governments. We need to move it out so that they have some measure of guidance or things to think about. And I got it over to the Senate, and I got hoisted in this split where about half the stakeholders said, we want specific guidance, we want a specific base mark, and about the other half said, we'll kill the bill if you give us a specific base, you know, a benchmark. And as a result, I couldn't get it out of the Senate. And now we have science guidance that gives us that benchmark and hopefully will break some of the logjam so we can think about what it is that we have to do in going forward. And it means it was really disappointing to me that, of course, two harbors take a hit in the Japanese tsunami, one's Crescent City and the other is Santa Cruz. And the real issue is sea level rise is not like a bathtub just filling up and you just measure it between 0 and 55 inches over 90 years. It's what happens in extreme events. And I know my first couple of years on the city council, we had presidentially declared disasters because of erosion, because of strong storms that were on the coast. That's exactly when sea level rise comes into play. The tsunami was at low tide before 14 or 55 inches of sea level rise. Imagine high tide and sea level rise. It's a whole different thing. So adaptation is a piece of it that we need to think about and we're trying to set the course for. But we also, the governor signed earlier this year the 33% renewable portfolio, really set renewables 33% goal. And interestingly, if we actually build every renewable project that's been permitted in the last year or two in California, we will be at 33%. But we have a number of issues. We have the issues of actually financing, issues of moving ahead, and we have the issues of habitat versus the renewables and trying to work it out. In my first weeks as secretary, I keynoted the annual Planning and Conservation League PCL Environmental Symposium. And instead of taking questions at the end, people lined up, and I just greeted them all. And one of the last guys comes up, and he says, I'm working on renewable energy. I'm on the environmental side. And I had to say, well, which side is that? I didn't get it because, you know, we're trying to get to 33% renewable and mitigate, and we also have habitat issues. He meant that he was on the habitat protection side, and he was fighting renewables in a lot of place. And it's like my time on the city council. I could always deal with people that just had a fundamental difference with me. My hardest time is when my friends were disagreeing. And that is exactly what is going on in that case with renewables, is making sure that we truly can mitigate some of the impacts to habitat and make it happen together. I was with the governor and the Secretary of the Interior at the groundbreaking for the largest solar installation in the country in Blythe about a month ago. And there's a reason it's in Blythe. It was incredibly hot and sunny, and basically nothing very substantial could live there. And it has been mitigated in a good way in how that can work. That is not true with many places in California, and it's a thing that we have to work, whether it's Golden Eagles, which you might read about in the next few days, or tortoises, or other kinds of things. We have to work to make it a winning situation for both, and we're working to do that. And then what it means is that we can set the goals. We can do the 33%. We can try to make that happen. We can do the AB 32 goal of getting back to 1990 by 2020. But it's really the individual action that all you are doing that is going to decide whether that happens. And today, a Public Policy Institute poll on the environment was released. And it has very interesting results, from my perspective, generally good. And the interesting thing is there's a fundamental belief that climate change is happening and we're in the middle of it. There's a fundamental belief in California that we have to do things about it. There's a fundamental belief that the federal and state governments are dysfunctional. And there's a fundamental belief that things will work better if they're operated by governments or institutions that are much closer to them, i.e. the locals. And so I think that's good news for what everybody here was talking about today and is trying to do. Because the hardest thing about this is that so much of it is individual decisions, all your constituents deciding to make decisions that are that are changes in what they do. I mean, personally, one of the things that I love is that my spouse moved in about 15 years ago, and he was not a recycler, and he just really thought it was the dumbest thing in the world. And I just love the fact that he is just so into recycling now, and he's the one that also went out and got all the burlap bags to go to the market and did everything himself, that I saw in the time we've been together how he fundamentally changed and how it changed just in our world. He's the one that made me about 5 years ago go out and get the composter for food scraps. And it is exactly an individual change that is sort of what, if you add an aggregate, if everybody in my town, and I happen to live in a town at least during the weekends where everybody is like what I just described, in the aggregate, your landfill's better, you're recycling, you're composting, you're doing so many things that deal with emissions in a very good way. And so it is those individual decisions. And I know when I was in the legislature, that was my goal, because water is a very key part of this. Everybody keeps arguing over what the percent of electricity usage in California is related to water, but listening to the debate, it goes from 16% to 33%. Somewhere in there is the amount of our total sum electricity in California that we use in the collection, treatment, distribution, and then wastewater and maybe treatment of water. So as much as one-third of our electricity in some places is used for that purpose. So every time you are more efficient with water, you're actually more efficient with electricity, and you're dealing with emissions in a very good way. And so in my 6 years in the legislature, I really dealt with water conservation in significant ways. And I think one of the messages that I wanted to give, partially in how I described about how waste diversion, we set goals and nobody thought we would meet it, is just how things change so quickly and we have the ability to do it. Because when I went into the legislature, it was believed that if you were a strong person working for water conservation, you were really a flaky environmentalist who couldn't deal with dams and was looking for a pretext not to support dams. And I think over the time, in the 10 years since that happened, people have changed to where it is truly understood that it is part of the entire solution for how we deal with water. And Los Angeles, which gets a bad rap a lot of times on water, in the greater LA area has grown by 3 million people in the last 20, 25 years on exactly the same amount of water. So they've accommodated whatever growth they've done with the water that they already were receiving. And so those are the kinds of things that we have to do over time. And I have to say, being Secretary of Resources, especially after being in local government for decades, has been like being on a massive field trip. And a field trip in a way that I think has surprised me, because I had a vision as somebody that had lots of contacts, worked on many of the issues in the agency, had lots of experience. I still learned many new things about what's going on statewide in ways that I hadn't thought about it. Rice farmers always get a bad rap for using excessive amounts of water in the Sacramento Valley. And yet now they're exercising wildlife conservation easements on many of their properties. And the difference between 3 million geese and 7 million geese flying through California every year and here is the fact that that's going on with the rice farmers. And where there used to be a timber industry in California that was really operating in some places at a less than sustainable level, now there are major easements going on. There are major things going on where timber industries are operating at a more sustainable level, but understanding that doing habitat protection plans is part of their doing business and their operation, and that they have to manage the entire watersheds of their timbers in ways that it wasn't happening before. And in the Delta, which is the Rubik's Cube of public policy issues, we are to the point that fish populations have crashed in the last 10 years, but as a condition of the dual goals that the legislature have adopted, we're working hard to figure out exactly what it would take to strongly bring back the fish populations, whether it's restoring some marshy areas, doing different flows at different times of the year, operating the Delta so that you can guarantee at certain times of spawning that the maximum amount of cold water possible is passing through the right areas, that we're going to try to figure out that it's not just a place to export water from, although under the dual goals, we will determine reliability of a certain amount of water that can be exported every year. The habitat protection is the co-equal goal that we have to establish and meet to meet the goal of water reliability. And then we have the renewable energy. So you look around the state and there are amazing things going on, but it's almost a question of, is it enough? And are we doing enough in time to deal with the issues of climate change, adaptation, and trying to shift in an economic way so the jobs come with it? And that is the challenge we're facing right now. And I think it's eminently doable. In California, our energy efficiency standards that were first adopted during the first Brown era have now saved California consumers upwards of $60 billion. And that's just what you say in terms of savings rather than the emissions that haven't happened and just what we've done. And yet we have to go the next steps. And I think the toughest thing is, and to go back to the analogy with the waste diversion, it's unbelievable doing 59% statewide because of the recycling, the different ways things are held out, the incredible reuse that some cities and counties are doing in doing that. But what it means is it's that next 41% is the hardest. It is really, you have to do amazing things to get to that point to do it. And when you conserve water, and in part out of environmental necessity, the Monterey Peninsula right now holds the record, and there's somewhere above 30% of water conservation individually or per capita across their district. But what it means is that when you conserve at that level, or conserve the way they're starting to do in Los Angeles, it means what you do deliver has to be rather reliable because you've lowered your margin of error for any variation in what you have delivered because people are being so efficient. So it's trying to put together all these pieces of the puzzle, and it is made so much easier when I sit through some of these discussions about just how people are working home by home, how they're working road by road, how we are thinking about doing this on the ground in a way that in the aggregate we meet those goals. That's going to be what allows us to continue in the lead. And believe me, we're in the lead nationwide and worldwide in a lot of the things that we're doing here in California. And I think Garrett mentioned in Oakland, he talked about Pavli. He just used it almost as a noun. And I was with Senator Pavli recently, and she said that her name had been added to some dictionary or something because it was just referred to, you do it with Pavli, that's a wonderful thing because I think it took the rest of the country coming around. And when those of us that were talking, when I was on the local government commission, we were talking about fuel efficiency standards as alternatives. If Detroit had listened to us then, they might not have needed a bailout in the last recession because they would be marketing where the general public was. And they're getting there, to their credit. And the other 49 states, through what this president has done since he's been there, are trying to be allowed to follow the lead of California in the fuel efficiency standards, which will then make a fundamental difference in our emissions and what we're doing. So I just wanted to come by and give you that message and just thank you for all the work that you're doing on the ground, because it's just going to make a big difference in us meeting our goals and us continuing in the leadership. And it is everything you've been talking about today, because on the ground, that's where the change is going to happen. So thanks for letting me come and speak to you. And I know I'll stick around a little bit in case anybody has any questions. Thank you. Yeah, he said we have about 5 to 10 minutes to questions.
Yeah,
and I might
regret
this, but
no, it's just me after you, and so I'm glad to give you by 5 or 10 minutes. So, does anybody want to ask Secretary Laird a question? Don't be shy.
Someone this morning was asking the question of how much effort is being made to coordinate with other states and get an even broader regional effort. How much do you end up doing that, or are you more just looking within California?
The question is looking to other states, and primarily I'm working with California, which is like riding a bucking bronco all in itself. However, there are some great relationships with other states. There's a West Coast Governors Collaborative on oceans and some energy issues where the governors of the western states are working together. And people are trying to feed off of what's going on in different states. And then there's some engagement just based on what the fallout is from our programs. I mean, when it was discovered, and this was before I was resources secretary, we're at the tail end of it now, that one of the major contractors with the California Water Project for providing energy was a coal-fired plant out of state. That contract over time was gradually discontinued. We're almost done. And it meant that there's discussions with other states, because the last thing you want to do is just displace the coal to somebody else, even though we don't want it. And things like that have led to many other discussions. And there have been many inquiries on how people can do what we're doing in California. And we're trying to, in a good collaborative way, help people with that.
Susan was from San Mateo County.
Hi, James Caruso. I'm with San Luis Obispo County. In our county.
And I got a big kick out of, I know very well that San Luis Obispo County is known as slow, but in your presentation you referred to slow planning, and I heard everybody laugh. they didn't get the San Luis Obispo part of it.
Well, everyone knows it now, though. It's slowplanning.org. So our Board of Supervisors recently approved two very large, 1,000 megawatts of renewable power, solar power out in the Carrizo Plain, and we had the problem of habitat protection. Sierra Club was very much against these plants, and when we have updated our general plan to try to add a renewable section to our energy element, they were fighting to take out the industrial scale and to put in distributed generation as a replacement. Our problem, though, is feed-in tariffs. And I was wondering if you could talk about, are we ever going to see any relief, or actually that's not relief, but any increase in feed-in tariffs so we can move into DG more than we are now?
It may be the answer is I think yes, but it's a very good question, because I succeeded in the legislature Fred Keeley, who worked very strongly from a more environmental perspective on all the energy programs at the time of the energy crisis, and also known as net metering. He really worked hard to get the maximum that you could get at the time for people getting some reimbursement or some credit for feeding into the grid and doing their own individual solar. And every year when I was vetting bills in the legislature, I would have a long discussion with my staff and various advocates about whether this was the year that we were going to do something on net metering to change some of the arrangements that were made at the time of the energy crisis. And I finally concluded that we would be ready to make changes when there was a little different critical mass of solar on homes across California, and there was a political constituency that was much stronger, sort of dealing with the energy companies. And in the energy company's defense, they do always have to have a readiness to serve and be ready to serve everybody on a certain day, whether it's sunny or not. But I think we've gotten to the point that they're much more flexible than they were before, and we're getting near that critical mass. And there are legislators that are working on this, hoping that we get to the point to move ahead from it. And I think it's just a question of when and how it happens.
Good. This is a question that is really not, having opportunity that you're here. And, okay, California is very commendable in terms of, leading not only the United States, but joining the global when it comes to climate and energy stuff. However, if we read, there are two distinct school of thought, especially when it comes to the effort that this lead. This morning, for example, we heard that it creates green job. In the second realm is the other school of thought, in which you read the very day in government, in the papers, is that it does hurt some businesses in operating business when it comes to California. I think about 3 weeks ago, I was with a contractor who wanted to install a new HVAC unit in a community. The requirement I was given in terms of permitting due to so many laws, he was saying, how can he survive? What are your views about this different school of thought, especially on the other end that is making businesses a little bit harder to conduct?
Well, we could have a panel that would go for about 2 hours on this and barely scratch the surface. But let me not run away from it, because when we, it's interesting, when we did AB 32, the Chamber of Commerce has an annual list in which they label bills job killer bills. They labeled AB 32 a job killer bill. And they basically, I think it was about the only job killer bill that Arnold Schwarzenegger signed in the last few years he was governor. Their term, job killer. And I stood up on the floor of the assembly and I said, how does the ultimate shutdown of the planet's climate rate in job killing? Isn't that the ultimate job killer? And I think it's a very emotional debate, and it is a debate that in many ways both sides are right about a lot of it. And so looking at that, and there were studies done at the time of Proposition 23 last year that basically AB 32 was generally neutral in jobs. For any that might go, new ones were created, and if it was the goal of saving the planet and it's neutral in jobs, you go for saving the planet. That is not an easy, that was very simple to say, but if I had to stand here and deal with one of those that lost their jobs to create the jobs in the course of that, that is not an easy thing. It is real. And so the question is how do we integrate it more than just an environmental program? Daryl Steinberg, the president of the Senate, is a foremost advocate of career tech with regard to environmental jobs, that we have community colleges and other places training to sort of retrain so that there are places for people to go in the new sector as the economy shifts. And that's something that we really have to be committed to in the midst of this, so that it is not just doing the right thing on mitigations or adaptations, it's making sure that we understand the economic issues that are associated with and do it. And it is very difficult, although I read this morning with great pleasure, I might add, Greg Lucas, who's a former San Francisco a Chronicle writer and has his own blog, did a comparison of Texas versus California this morning, because everybody says it's a better economic climate. And the air's worse, the water's worse, the disparity between rich and poor is worse, the number of uninsured of health care is much higher in Texas. And so it frames the argument about what trade-offs do you want to make and in sort of what your policy is and where you want to live. And we just have to realize that it's not clean, that you have to do these other things with it to make it all work.
Yeah, that was great. Well, this is the end. I just wanted to thank everybody who came for the last 2 days for coming. Thanks everybody who stayed for this last part of our agenda as well. Also wanted to thank the people at Local Government Commission. I know Yvonne did that this morning, but you know they work really hard to do these events, and I think they did a pretty good job. You know, also the people at the hotel, we had some technical snags, but I don't think it was necessarily their fault, and they really worked hard to help it make happen too, so they did a good job too as well. And of course, the utilities are the sponsors, and the other SEEK nonprofits, ICLEI and Institute for Local Government, and the Air Resources Board, and PUC, and the Energy Commission, who all helped develop the agenda and find speakers and so forth for us. So. With that, I guess we're done. And if you're going to do the tour, you're going to meet right outside of the registration area right after this. And if you have your own car, you probably can add yourself to the tour. But thank you very much. Well, name badges are out there. And also, you're going to be getting an email about the presentations. And also, you'll be getting an evaluation email next week. Thank you.